Library with your host, Raven Starr. Seeker's Library explores tools to cultivate self-awareness and the development of our highest human potential. Join the World Bridging Network of Truth Seekers here on Seeker's Library. This is your host, Raven Starr, and I want to thank you for being here in whatever time-space nexus you are listening. My guest today is Mark Flaherty. Mark is a consultant astrologer, author, and retreat organizer who lives in the Sacred Valley of the Incas. A complete skeptic by nature, he spent more than a decade in the Amazon jungle participating in ayahuasca ceremonies. His healing journey is chronicled in his book, Shedding the Layers, How Ayahuasca Saved More Than My Skin. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you. It is good to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. So you have clients in over 50 countries. Wow. And I loved hearing how you went from being a total skeptic to a world-class astrologer. So to start, yeah. I want to address this. You described yourself as a skeptic by nature. Mm-hmm. Is this in relation to your astrological chart and being an earth sign? How do you define being a skeptic, and are you still a skeptic?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I was always such a rationalist, like such a analytical, rational person that as far as I was concerned, all that exists is sort of this physical world and, you know, there's nothing else out there. And yet there was also a part of me that was just so curious of exploring anything from sort of spirituality. You know, when I was a kid, I was fascinated by ghost stories, but I was fascinated by this stuff and totally skeptical about it. I couldn't believe any of this was possible. And yet something in me kept exploring it. Am I still a skeptic? In a way, yes, to be honest, in the sense that I have to experience something for myself to feel that it's true. You know, if I hear something from someone else, my natural inclination is to be dubious, but I'm also open to explore it. And so, you know, if that's my experience, like, you know, through ayahuasca ceremonies, meeting and connecting with spirits, for example, or when I eventually got into astrology, through my own exploration, I realized these things were true. And so through that direct experience, I couldn't deny them anymore. But I'm still always, I'm curious, open, and skeptical about anything that I haven't experienced for myself.
And I want to get into this experience more. You say that astrology is not a belief system. It's about exploring it for your life. And really, I feel like all of these systems are about this human experiment, about experiencing it for yourself. So will you elaborate just a bit more on that experience?
Yeah, well, of course, I can only talk from my own perspective. But, you know, years ago, what I thought astrology was, you know, the horoscope articles you get in newspapers and magazines. And so, of course, I thought that was nonsense. It's like, how can this be true? It's essentially saying the same thing will happen to 1/12 of the entire population. So I pretty much just dismissed it. And then just about exactly 10 years ago now, when I was in the Amazon jungle on an ayahuasca retreat, one of the apprentice shamans there at the time, he's an English guy, he'd been an astrologer for 25, 30 years, and he just gave a 1-hour overview of the essence of what astrology really is. And he literally blew my mind in that hour, because something in me, I guess, was ready for it, and it made sense in a different way. I was like, oh, that's what it is. And So from that 1 hour, I immediately went away and started reading online, buying books, exploring, these deeper aspects of astrology, the signs, the houses, the aspects, the angles, the connections between the different planets. And as I was reading, looking at my own chart and reading things about it, I couldn't deny that what it was saying was how I felt, how I saw the world was my experience. And so, that then extended out into looking at friends and family's charts before eventually starting some formal studies with some other astrologers.
Yeah, and I've been exploring all the different types of astrology, and I've been doing a bit of a social media experiment trying to see what system resonates with my audience. And in both my personal experience and social experiments, I'm getting that all of them are valid. And actually, after watching some of your videos, I can honestly say that I resonate more with being a Libra air sign, which is my tropical sun, versus my sun in Vedic sidereal and 13th star sign astrology is Virgo. And I do still feel like I have some qualities that are Virgo-esque, but when I heard you explain all the different elements, I was like, I'm a Libra. So it's important that we test and experience all of these things, everything for ourselves, first and foremost. So I really appreciate that you make that really clear with your work.
Absolutely. I don't want anyone to believe in astrology. Then it's just another idea. But if somebody has an interest and a curiosity, explore it for yourself and make your own mind up. I don't really have any interest in trying to convince anyone that it's true and it's valid and it's helpful, because if somebody doesn't believe in it and doesn't want to, doesn't even want to experiment, then I'm fine with that. But there's no discussion to be had there then, because they're not really open to understanding what it really may be. It reminds me, there's a tremendous book that's it's a big book, but if it's such an interesting exploration of astrology by a guy named Richard Tarnas, and it's called Cosmos and Psyche. And he was essentially an astrology doubter or skeptic, but took the time, a long, long time, to explore it for himself. And he chronicles in his book initially just the basic precepts of astrology, but then he goes through decades, hundreds of years of world history, and how the events at that time lined up and correlated with the symbolism of the key planetary transits and connections between those planets at the time. And it's just hundreds and hundreds of pages of evidence, essentially. What I find interesting is people from a scientific worldview, which I understand because that's where I used to be. The essence of science is to explore for yourself, right? And to experiment. And yet with things like astrology, because the entire paradigm doesn't fit into the scientific worldview, then they simply dismiss it out of hand rather than thinking maybe there's something else going on in the way the world operates that can't be explained by science. And I don't necessarily want to go on about this, but I have a really interesting example of what I'm talking about that actually comes from Carl Jung's own experiments.
Yes, I was actually just going to ask you to share about your Carl Jung information, so this is perfect.
Right. So, as I don't know if people generally know, Carl Jung was very into astrology himself. And it was one of his struggles, and it was the reason essentially why he ended up separating from Sigmund Freud, was because Jung had this kind of inner battle between science and rationalism and a very mystical outlook on life. And Freud was very against the mystical side of it. But anyway, so Jung did this experiment one time, and for me, it really encapsulates the the way astrology works, the way life works, and how astrology describes that, and how it falls outside of the scientific paradigm, and why you cannot do statistical analysis on astrology charts and come up with valid results. Because the essence of astrology is it's about the individual person, the individual moment. You know, if you're doing a reading, it's about, it's kind of a complete system in itself, that moment and the interaction. So very briefly, the Jung story is that he was looking into this thing in astrology that's known as the cosmic marriage. So there's certain factors when you're looking at romantic relationships with people, long-term romantic relationships. There's three main factors that have been identified in the sort of historical literature of astrology as to being a very, very often showing up in terms of the connection between the two people. And I don't want to get too deep into the technical aspects, but essentially they are one person's sun conjunct, which means exactly on top of the other person's moon, one person's moon on top of the other person's moon, and one person's moon conjunct the other's ascendant. So these three different factors that Jung was exploring, and he had three female assistants helping him with this study. He was trying to do this statistical analysis. And so these women went out and collected all of this data from these different couples, and then Jung analyzed them. And what was fascinating was, if he analyzed all of the data from the three women together, there was no statistical significance whatsoever with these three factors. However, when he took all of the charts from the first woman, what he found was that there was a statistical significance of correlations with sun conjunct moon between all of the charts. When he took the second woman's data, there was a statistically significant correlation for moon conjunct moon. And when he took the third woman's, there was a statistical significance for moon conjunct ascendant. So essentially, all three of these factors showed up, but separately. And when you took them all as a whole, there was no validity. And the pièce de résistance, what was truly fascinating about this study, was when Jung then looked at the charts of his three assistants and their marriages, they each correlated with the one factor that shown up in their data. So the woman whose charts showed sun conjunct moon was a factor had that between her and her husband, and likewise the two other women.
Wow, that's so interesting.
And so it's something about, and you know, Jung was the one who coined the phrase synchronicity.
Right.
You know, meaning an a-causal connecting principle between things. So not cause and effect. So in astrology, the planets aren't causing anything, but they're describing things that are happening in our lives. And so this synchronicity was showing up. It was like the data collected by these women was synchronous to their lives. Like, it couldn't be separated from essentially their consciousness, their energy was part of their study. And so astrology isn't this objective science. It's a subjective exploration of our own personal experience of life. And there isn't actually an objective world out there. There is only our personal subjective experience of it.
Beautiful. I want to get into synchronicity a little bit more. But before I do, I want to talk about the intro video you have on your site, which, side note, it's extremely well produced and packed with nature scenes, which I love. And you share that an astrological consultation is a ritual, and that you are essentially connecting to the spirits of astrology and asking for their direction and guidance so that we may live in harmony with our divine essence, which is such a beautiful way to describe it. And so what do you mean by ritual? Because Nowadays, that could mean that you're like smudging your computer with sage. So I just want to be clear.
Yes, essentially, it's, I mean, I do smudge my room with sage.
Good.
And so what I generally do before a reading is I call in, I ask for the spirits of astrology and my guides to be present with me. And, you know, I see my role in a reading as sort of being a channel or a translator for this wisdom. And so I see astrology, I see the planets, which are essentially archetypes of a particular energy, as essentially being spirits. And so it's like inviting them, which is another way of saying inviting the chart that I'm working with to speak to me. But it brings, for me, I think it's something about, it brings it alive more. And so, you know, the ritual for me is around my intention and my invoking of the assistance of the spirits, essentially. And to as much as I can, listen, you know, and I don't literally hear them. I'm not that way inclined. But what I find is that often as I'm doing the session, an odd thought or something that I hadn't considered in my preparation just pops into my head, and I find myself saying to the client, I don't really know why I'm saying this or if this resonates, but, you know, what about this? And more often than not, it's something that's quite significant for them. And so I think that somehow having the intention to invite spirit in and making that part of the reading really assists in, for me, providing a more accurate and useful reading for a person.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, and that's beautiful. Thank you. So I first heard about you through my friend on his podcast, and towards the end, you started talking about horary astrology, and I was so intrigued, and I'm so excited for you to share all about it. Will you explain more about this system and your personal journey in discovering it?
Yes, I will. And I'm very happy you asked me about it, because it's the most interesting aspect of astrology for me. It's very different. I love all astrology, but horary astrology is something very specific. And essentially, it's using astrology as a form of divination, which ultimately, I think you could say that even doing a natal chart reading can be seen as divination. But this is something very precise. So rather than, you know, tell me about myself or what's going to happen this year, a client comes with a very specific question. And essentially, the moment the astrologer hears the question in the place he is or she is, the chart for that moment is the horary chart. And then the idea is that the position of the planets will describe very specifically the situation at hand and guidance for the client. So it usually comes in the form of a yes-no type question. And the more important the question, it seems to be, the more specific and clear the guidance. But, you know, it's a, well, I use myself as an example. So I asked the question last year because I was feeling like it was right for me to move to Peru. I was living in England at the time. And so I asked the question. And I should say, actually, before I get into the details of that, so when I talk about horary astrology, is essentially a test of desire. And desire, as my incredible teacher, Dr. Jeffrey Cornelius, told me, desire comes from the Latin desideri, which means from the stars. And so the chart is a test of your true desire. And what that essentially translates to when you're correlating it with the stars is, it's basically saying, is this divine will? And that's not different from, is this in my deepest interest? And it doesn't necessarily mean it's the easiest road, but is this my deepest desire? Is this divine will? And the chart will describe through the symbols of the planets, not just give a yes or no answer usually, but very specific aspects and background to the situation at hand, as well as what is the right move and the kinds of things to expect if you take that action. And then, you can say your free will is then whether or not to follow that. And so the spirits will speak and they will say, yes, this is your true desire. This is divine will. And then you decide whether or not you want to take it. Because as I say, that's not always the easy option in life. But if you want to live in accordance with your soul's deepest desire, essentially, then this kind of reading at specific moments with very important questions can provide like great clarity.
Yeah, this is when the word synchronicity came up for me. I read the description on your website, and because it is all about divine timing, right? And it's so interesting. It's when you read the question, you cast the chart, and it has to be a yes or no question, but the details you get are beyond that.
Yes, and actually I say it is it a yes or no question, but it's more in an ideal world, the client should already have a sense. And so it's something to sit with for a while, and I feel like this is the right move, but I'm not sure. What it isn't is delegating responsibility for your life. So it's like, I don't know what to do, you just tell me. And so that's why it's important that one has to have a sense. And it could be wrong. When I've cast these for myself, I've very often got answers that show that what I thought was right wasn't, and have always followed it. But what's really fascinating, and it's where astrology really goes beyond the sort of clockwork timing rational model, which, with things like transits, so the planets moving in the sky and when they impact your birth chart, it's quite easy with that kind of astrology to have a sort of fated, deterministic, rational mindset of these cosmic forces. But this kind of blows the whole idea of time and how life works out of the water. Because, to go back to my example, I asked this question in December last year, 2018, we're 2020 now, so just over a year ago. And I'd been thinking of moving to Peru, but I was coming to visit in January. And so I was like, I could ask this question, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to wait and come and see. And I was sitting at my desk at home in England doing some other work one day when out of nowhere, there was just this overriding impulse of, I have to ask this question now. Like I couldn't not. And so I did, and it provided, the depth of detail it went into around how when I was back in England, I was struggling physically. I had some health stuff going on. That showed up in the chart, and it showed that moving to Peru was going to be very beneficial physically, but it also showed that, like, my intention for moving was really around connecting to like-minded people and being part of a spiritual community. That showed up in the chart that it would happen, and also even showed up that some friends who I'd been thinking about may be willing to lend me some money to buy land. It even showed that would happen and they would be willing to do so, which is how it all played out.
Wow, that's so cool. Okay, so yeah, I'm glad you shared that story. You have another story on your website, an example that you gave about a lady considering living in an ashram too, and I thought that was so interesting because she really, really wanted to live there, and you just laid it out so clearly that it wasn't in her highest and best, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And You know, that's an interesting situation because it was a very good friend of mine, and I had really mixed feelings because it was like I was really happy that I could deliver this news that it wouldn't be good for this person and knew that they would kind of be devastated by it at the same time. But the chart really showed, again, a lot more detail. So it showed that the person was kind of infatuated with the guru, and that they were going against their own spiritual wisdom, giving away their own power, and very clearly that it wouldn't be in their best interest to go and do that. And so, they followed my advice actually, even though they, not even really my advice, the spirit's advice, even though it was something they really wanted to do and thought that it would be good for them, but something in them took on board and respected the guidance from the chart.
In your experience, are most people, when they do a horary astrology reading, typically take the advice, or have you seen anyone not take the advice? Or is that really part of it? When you sign up for that, you trust in that divine guidance?
I always say to people before even asking if they're interested in it, I always say to them, this is a serious thing. Don't ask the question if you don't want a truly honest answer in terms of what's in your best interest. Don't come to this as a let's see what it says and then I'll make my own mind up. There's got to be a certain commitment on their part. And also the truth is that actually, as much as I love it, horary questions don't come around that often. I don't do many of them. And sometimes even when people ask the question, the spirits won't speak. Essentially, there's a certain number of what are called strictures against judgment, which essentially means if certain features show up in the chart, it's a warning from spirit, essentially, to me to say, I am not allowed to judge this chart. And so that happens on a fair number of occasions. And it's not always the case that, sadly, and I don't know why, but it's not always the case that very clear answers are given. Even my teacher, who he was really one of the main people responsible for bringing back this very ancient form of astrology in the 80s and 90s. And even he says that on average, it's like a third of the time you can give very clear, specific answers. A third of the time you can give an answer, but it's not. There's something that's just not completely clear about it. And a third of the time, you can't give any answer. And that seems to be true. And it's one of the things that kind of annoys me as a very, as a sort of practical Virgo. It's like, I just want to give people advice. And it's not always the case that horary is appropriate for that. And it's one of those things that I don't know why it shouldn't always give clear answers, but I guess the nature ultimately of astrology generally is you can only give people what they need to hear at that time. And sometimes, for reasons unknown to me, it's not right for them to get an answer to their question at that time.
Yeah, this makes me think of the law of free will. And I have been following the law of one and listening to those channelings, and they share just as much as they can without infringing upon the law of free will. And you share this concept, free will versus fate, in one of your, I think it was one of your YouTube videos, Fate versus Free Will. So will you elaborate more on that?
Yeah, I can't remember what I said in that
I
video. I
think you
think I
said it's
filmed it a few
neither
years ago.
and both.
Neither and both, right?
Yeah. Which, I totally agree. And that's what it sounds like with horary astrology. It's just, I mean, it even makes me think of Ayurveda. It depends,
It depends.
right?
That reminds me of when I was first learning astrology. I'm going to go off on a slight tangent, but One of my other teachers, actually the guy, the ayahuasca shaman who first introduced astrology to me, I would have all these questions to him. Is like, does, this planet in this sign, does it mean this? Or this and this, does it mean this? And every time his answer would be, it depends. And because it's true, and it was so frustrating for me as a very analytical Virgo when I was learning astrology, because it's like, I just want you to tell me how it is, or a book to tell me. But everything is contextual. So on the one hand, something can mean something, but you always have to look at the chart as a whole. And so I'll come back to your question, but just you saying it depends really reminded me of my frustrating times learning astrology, because it's not this cookie cutter. Like, you can get good books that will say, when you have Sun in Libra, you're like this and this and this, and when you have Mercury in Virgo, it's like this. And there's a lot of truth in that. And it's like you have to separate the chart, break it down into its constituent parts to learn astrology. But then when you're really sort of deeply into the practice of it, it's like you have to learn the rules to almost let go of them, and then something else can happen. And so it's this, I kind of consider it more a mystical art than a science. In that it's there are sort of rules and techniques that are very important, and there's this other mysterious aspect beyond it as well that's kind of hard to explain, but you get a feel for as you're practicing astrology. And what's also interesting is it basically how an astrologer does astrology will reflect their own chart. It's their own subjective view of the world. And so every astrologer can have a slightly different take on things because they see things slightly differently because they're a bit different. And yet it's all valid and all can provide assistance for the client in that moment. It's what they need to hear. And also, like Carl Jung used to experience in his own practice, I remember reading about what's really common is sort of a spate of people coming to me as an astrologer who have similar themes going on in their own lives that reflect something I'm dealing with at the same time. It's essentially that the clients you get are a part of your practice and your life, and it's all intertwined somehow. It's not these separate people, client and astrologer. Somehow it's all melded together, and there's like another level of life operating in a way beyond even just the two people sitting in a room talking about astrology. But let me get back to, I didn't answer your question. I just went off on a massive tangent. Fate and free will. So I think, I don't know the answer to that, quite frankly, but I think a really good way of looking at it in terms of astrology is your fate is your birth chart. So, you're a Libra, you're not going to suddenly become a Gemini. And so the fact that you have Sun in Libra and whatever else is going on in your chart and all of those themes, there'll be certain key themes that are important in your life based on your chart that can show up in different ways throughout your life. And another person with a different chart will have other main themes and challenges and gifts. The free will is what you do with it. So it's essentially how we respond to life experience. So, I don't know why, but suddenly Russell Brand has popped into my head to use as an example. And when he was younger, he had enormous alcohol and drug problem. And so he has in his chart, he's a Gemini, which is his gift for words. I love listening to him speak. He has such an elegant way of describing things. He has his Gemini sun exactly opposite Neptune. And so Neptune, sun opposite Neptune, I mean, there's many aspects to it, but what's very common is, for example, somebody who doesn't have their dad around when they're younger, either physically or emotionally. And you know, that was the case for him. I don't think his dad was around at all in his childhood. And people with Neptune, like Neptune's a symbol for what I like to call the formless source of this physical manifest world. So whether you want to call it God, consciousness, the universe, life. And so when people have Neptune closely connected to their sun, it's very often, very common in younger years to get into alcohol and drugs as essentially a way of sort of the lower or the unhealthy way of trying to dissolve one's sense of separate identity, to lose oneself in something. And, you know, escapism. But what's ultimately driving that is a sense of a knowing that who I really am is something bigger than this personal self. And so the free will, if you like, is to eventually start embodying the higher aspects of Neptune, which is essentially spiritual exploration. You know, Russell Brand's deeply into transcendental meditation and all kinds of different spiritual philosophies and practices. And so, you know, you could say his free will was the choice to do something other than addiction. And it could have played out in different ways, but it's, you know, there's many other things that Neptune can symbolize, like the artist, the poet, the musician. He has the choice of how he embraces and deals with a difficult Neptune in his chart. And so it's still Neptune, and whatever happens in his life, it will be somewhere on the spectrum of the kinds of things that that symbolizes. But we have the choice in essentially in whether we start to embody the higher aspects of a particular key archetype in our chart or continue with the lower aspects.
And I'm really enjoying reading your blog and how you kind of show the evidence for people. Like, I read this one on, I think his name was Danny something for the BBC, and you showed that, like, it was fated for him to leave or be fired. It's in his chart, you know? So I thought that was so interesting. And that's what I would relate to the fate part, right? And I love what you said about the free will too. It's like what you do with it.
Yeah, the fate is, I think, you know, for example, we know when big transits are going to happen. And so something big is fated to happen at that time, but astrology isn't deterministic. You know, you can't necessarily, oh, you've got your Saturn returns in a year, this is what's going to happen. But you can say huge changes are coming at this time. And life is asking you to grow up, to be more mature, more responsible. And if you don't step into that yourself, then life will create situations to force you to do it. So, you know, for example, somebody might want to quit their job, but they're too scared to, even though it's not what they really want to do. Under such a transit, they might get made redundant or fired. And, you know, it's like life forcing them to ultimately to be more in alignment with what's really true for them and their life. And so I think in a way, we can't always mitigate or stop really difficult things happening, but the more in alignment we are with what's right for us, the less life has to kind of slap us around the face to learn the lesson.
And you share a story about winning the lottery by following astrology. And so I'm wondering how often you check your own charts and how often you recommend people getting readings done.
How often do I check my own chart? I mean, I kind of always know, you know, I can look, for example, if I look once, I have a good sense of everything important that's coming up for the next year. And so I'm always aware of the key transits and things that are going on for myself. What I've had to learn to do is not try and control that too much and think that I know what it's going to mean. it's an extremely useful tool for understanding and recognizing when big things happen, and you can kind of understand the deeper meaning or purpose behind it, rather than sort of getting stuck in the superficial experience, which might be difficult. I find for myself it's kind of comforting in a way, and very helpful to be like, okay, this is it can point to blind spots of things I'm not seeing, and seeing how a certain life event is helping me to be more conscious of my shadow or my blind spots. In terms of how often people should get readings, I think generally once a year or so is a nice period. But also, if something important is happening, that's the good time to do it. If there's something important and you don't know, or you're looking for guidance and advice, so that may happen for somebody 2 or 3 months after another reading. Somebody else is just kind of cruising through life and may not want one for 2 or 3 years. It's always good to come to the reading with an intent and a desire to understand a particular something or area of life, rather than just this tell me what's going to happen for the next 12 months, which I do less of those kind of readings now because it's just a bit general and vague. I'm more interested in when people have specific issues that are up, and it's like, what's going on here? And helping to unpick that and help sort of orient and guide them through a situation based on what the planets are showing.
And you offer relationship chart readings as well, and you have videos explaining the elements of the sun signs and the best relationship connection. So, do you recommend every intimate partnership get a reading done despite how long they've been together? And is it best to do it at the very beginning of a relationship if a relationship's having a problem, or is it just really like whenever?
Definitely not at the beginning of a relationship, I would say, because then you can get too wrapped up in what may happen. And much better a bit further down the line, where you see a certain dynamic playing out, maybe between the two of you, a particular challenge, something your partner does that irritates the hell out of you, or vice versa. And so again, when the specific context, then I think it's much more powerful. One of the things you have to really be careful about with astrology, and something I've learned over and over and over again myself, because when I first came to astrology, I was like, ah, now I've got all the answers to the universe, and I can figure everything out that's going to happen and how to deal with it, and basically how to get everything I want, which is a very, very controlling way to come at it. And so, life kind of bit me a few times through that to show me that that's not really the best approach to astrology. And so it's more, yeah, it's letting life play out a bit, to go back to the relationship question. See how it is in the beginning. Just enjoy your time together, rather than I want to know from day one if this is going to work out, or whether I shouldn't bother, or it's live it and see, rather than, and this is what I kind of did with astrology a bit in the beginning, was I want to sort of step back from my life, discover the exact perfect way to operate so I never make any mistakes, and so nothing ever goes wrong, like a true Virgo likes to do. And yeah, it doesn't really work like that.
Yeah, and we've talked about how astrology for each person, it's really individual. And I'm I'm not an astrologist, and I know there's a lot of people that really just focus on kind of like the basics. The sun sign would be the first, as well as I think the moon and ascendant. And so you have a video breaking down astrology, and you share that our sun sign is like our hero's journey. So I'd love for you to explain that a bit more. And is knowing your sun and your moon and your ascendant, for all the newbies out there, is that really the best place to start?
Yes, it really is. You know, there's so much. If you ever look at an astrology chart, there's just an insanely overwhelming amount of information in there, which all can have purpose and validity at some point in your life. But fundamentally, yeah, if you just understand some key themes of your sun nature, your moon nature, and your ascendant, that's a hell of a lot of information in there, and that alone can be extremely valuable. And so absolutely, those are the, in terms of understanding your own chart, that's absolutely where to start. And then depending how obsessed you get by astrology, then you can go deeper or just settle for that knowledge, and it's very helpful. You know, in terms of the hero's journey question, it's, and that was a phrase coined by Joseph Campbell, the mythologist and lecturer, philosopher, I guess you'd call him. So essentially, like, if you think of the symbolism of the solar system, the sun is in the middle and all of the other planets revolve around it. And so when you translate that symbolically to a person, the sun is essentially the core or the center of our being, around which everything else relates. And so all of the other planets and what's going on with them have validity in our life. But fundamentally, people are almost always like their sun nature, more like their sun nature than anything else. And that's not just the sun sign, so that's important, but obviously not all Virgos are going to be the same. There'll be certain traits in common, but then, you know, really, and that can be enough to understand that, but kind of the next level of understanding your own hero's journey is other, how that is in the chart, so particularly which other planets it's closely correlated with. Because the archetypes, you know, like in Russell Brand's case, Neptune is a key part of his hero's journey. And that's because it's very closely connected to his sun. And so other planets that are involved, as well as the house that the sun is in, you know, that's a whole other area of the birth chart, usually a lot less well known than the signs. The houses are essentially different areas of life. So, you know, put very simply, you could say the planet or the sun or the moon is the what energy, what archetype is being expressed. The sign is how, in what way that energy is expressed. And the houses are where, in what area of life. So, you know, that can be anything, any, ultimately all arenas and areas of life can be described somehow in the 12 houses. But, you know, to give some of the classic simple examples, one, the 10th house would be closely correlated with vocation and career. So if someone has their sun in the 10th house, then it's somebody whose sense of identity is very closely intertwined with their place in the world at large. They're not going to be somebody who goes and does a job and then lives their life outside of their work. Who they are is their work. You know, somebody else may be in the 4th house and their identity is closely connected with their family and their home. And their key sort of life lessons will play out in the arena of home and family much more.
Thank you so much for that statement. I'm always looking for ways to understand astrology in simple terms, and I'm definitely going to use that. Thank you. And I've been described by an astrologer friend as a Scorpionic Libra because my Venus is in Scorpio. So Would knowing where your Venus is in your chart be like the number four thing to know for beginners?
Only if you're a Libra or a Taurus.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I'll explain why. I mean, this is, I was going to bring this into my last answer, but I thought that's another level of interpretation that's, it's kind of, it is the next level. And it's about, so every planet is said to rule a sign, meaning that there is, essentially, you could say there is an affinity between the archetype of the planet and the archetype of different signs. And so Libra and Taurus, for example, are both ruled by Venus. And so there is an affinity between Venus and those two signs. And so, yes, the next level of interpretation for any Libra is what sign is your Venus in? Because it's like that's how your Libra nature, it's kind of, it's almost like a chain of correlation between sort of different aspects of our being. So you're a Libra, which means you're, amongst other things, a people person, very, very good. Usually Libras are connecting with others, very interesting with others. With Venus in Scorpio, your Libran curiosity for people will take place in the Scorpio realms, which is everything that's essentially deep, hidden, esoteric. You know, it's Scorpio is kind of the realm of the underworld and the shadow and the depths of life. And so it's passion and intensity and like wanting to delve to the root of things. And so that's kind of how I would imagine you really want to relate to others, not just a sort of superficial chit chat. So yeah, absolutely.
And depending on if you had a Jupiter sign, would the same thing kind of apply, knowing that where Jupiter is, if it was your sun sign?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll list them very briefly. So if we start with Aries, I'll just go through and say which planet is associated with which sign. So Aries is ruled by Mars, Taurus, Venus, Gemini is ruled by Mercury, Cancer by the Moon, Leo, the Sun, Virgo, Mercury, Libra, Venus, Scorpio, Mars, Sagittarius is Jupiter, Capricorn and Aquarius are both Saturn, and Pisces is Jupiter. So that's the traditional rulerships. You'll also hear other people talking about outer planets as ruling some of the signs, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. That's a whole other discussion, but I think the traditional rulers have more power and more validity. So yeah, based on your sun sign, if you're a Pisces or a Sag, then whatever sign Jupiter's in will have great significance. And actually, I'm just thinking, I've got a really good example of that to briefly share. So Bruce Lee is a Sagittarius, and he has, let me remember this right. So he's a Sagittarius, which is often a sign of somebody deeply into spirituality, a spiritual seeker. But his Jupiter is in the earthy physical body sign of Taurus, and I think either right next to Mars or Saturn in Taurus. And so his spirituality is, it's channeled through Jupiter sign, which is Taurus. And so it's about his, oh yeah, it's next to Saturn. So it's his physical body practice, and Saturn's influence is all about discipline and commitment and hard work. And so, you know, that really encapsulates his martial arts practice, which, you know, for him wasn't just physical stuff, but very rooted in his own sort of philosophical, spiritual understandings of life.
Right. Oh, thank you for that. Love Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. And I would be remiss if I did not ask you about plant medicine. I have personally gone to Peru to the jungle myself, only for 10 days. Sounds like you've spent like a decade. And I know it was life-changing. And you've had years and years in the jungle and hundreds of ceremonies, literally healing yourself, which is all documented in your book. So what would you like to share about plant medicine?
Yeah, so I mean, firstly, plant medicines and initially ayahuasca was the catalyst for enormous every single aspect of myself, my life changing. So before ayahuasca, I was a computer programmer living in London, miserable, earning good money, supposedly having a good life, and really, really miserable. Like, just had this sense of this can't be all there is to life. You know, I remember sitting in my office and just looking around and like, just this can't be it. And everyone else seemed quite content with what they were doing. And I wanted to be content with it. It's like, I want this life. But something in me was like, I don't know what I'm looking for, but I'm looking for something. And I think for me, given my very rational, skeptical nature, it took something like the intensity of ayahuasca to kind of blow my psyche wide open and help me to directly experience, you know, something more, you know, spirit realms, other, just really expanding my consciousness in a way that I didn't fully understand. I can't say I fully understand it now, but that was undeniable in the experience. You know, this was not like taking drugs. This was like, I don't know what this is, but it is absolutely real. And so, yeah, I mean, that I had a very, very long journey with ayahuasca, from very extreme, agonizing physical illness that is essentially the story of the book I wrote. But yeah, it took a long time to get to the point where I was kind of able to function in the world. I mean, literally all my skin fell off. And this was coming before ayahuasca. I had this insane skin condition that was kind of rooted in. There was like this inferno physical heat inside my body. And I don't know, I guess it was trying to escape somehow. And I spent probably 5 years barely able to move, mostly lying in bed. You know, I would just leave my bed to eat dinner or do ayahuasca ceremonies. And that very, very slowly over a very long time helped, you know, heal a huge portion of that physical illness, which was my reason for going and living in the jungle and staying there for so long. As a kind of side effect, it also transformed everything else in my life, my entire understanding of how life works, and, you know, ultimately led me on this path to being an astrologer and living in Peru. And so, yeah, you know, now what I'm really interested in doing, something that's very recent, really just in the last few months, that I've started to step into it, but is combining astrology with San Pedro on retreats here in Peru. So San Pedro is another plant medicine, generally less well known about than ayahuasca. I think it's starting to become more known, but still, you know, everyone, ayahuasca is kind of mainstream these days in terms of people's knowledge of it, I think. And so, you know, San Pedro is a, in many ways, more gentle, but no less profound medicine. It's a cactus and you do the ceremonies during the day. And for me, it really helped in terms of getting in touch with feelings and emotions that had been repressed for a long time, that even all that ayahuasca hadn't quite managed to touch. And so, you know, I'm really excited about these upcoming retreats. The first one I'm planning with a good friend of mine here who's a San Pedro shaman. And the idea is to bring in understanding of the person's chart, particularly, you know, if there's key themes going on in their life at this time, to help them understand that from the perspective of astrology, to help them see another aspect of what they're dealing with, and then take that into the San Pedro ceremony as another sort of combining the two, which I think, I mean, on their own, they're both very, very powerful tools for self-understanding and transformation. And I think together can, we'll see what happens, but I think can be really beneficial to people because they have more context from the astrology now of what is coming up in ceremony and what is, you know, what they're working on, what the medicine is helping them to see or to release in order to move forwards in their life.
Wow, that sounds amazing. And yeah, the Sacred Valley is such a beautiful place. I visited back in 2014, and it has so much ancient history, and it's just a gorgeous place. So I've done a few San Pedro ceremonies myself, but combining it with astrology like that and just looking at the center that you're going to be sharing all of that in looks so beautiful. And you only have a few spots left, is that right?
We do. So this first one that I've been advertising, which is it's 9 days, so it's August the 2nd to the 11th, and it's half full now. So it's we're limiting it to just 10 people, and 5 places are still available. And I mean, you're right. It is, you know, I live just around the corner from the center that we'll be doing it at, and this whole area. It's not just stunningly beautiful, but it is. I don't know what it is, but it is an extremely powerful energetic location. The mountains all around, you know, I guess the Incas didn't call it the Sacred Valley for no reason. There's a lot of intense, powerful energy here that I think really supports the ceremonies and the work here. Yeah, I think it just adds a stronger dimension to the work and the transformation that can happen through this work.
Definitely. Thank you. So I love asking this as my last question. If you could leave the listeners with a final piece of advice, what would that be?
One thing that I've been doing for about a year or so is, as often as I can, I intend to do it every day, but I don't, but several times a week is literally talking to spirit. So, you know, I do it with the in my readings, but sitting at an altar, lighting a candle, some sage, whatever, and inviting spirit, however you want to conceive of that, of the divine, your spirit guide, your ancestors. And it's actually the San Pedro shaman that I'm working with who got me into this. He's South African, and it's a very traditional African thing to, especially to talk to the ancestors. And you know, I'm such a skeptic. I don't experience anything when I do it. And so it was hard for me to do it for a while. But it's like, okay, I'm just gonna do it as a practice. And I can't say that I have any profound experiences in doing that. But I tell you what, I really have a sense of things opening up in my life and new possibilities. So like talking to them about seemingly mundane things in a way, you know, it's like, this is what's going on in my life. This is what I'm struggling with. Help me with this. Open the way, you know, bring me new astrology clients. Bring me insight on this thing that I'm struggling with. And, you know, just the intention of it, like truly inviting spirit into one's life. And some people do it and they have very deep connections when they do it. I don't, but something in me knows that. You know, these being spirits are there, the guides are there to help us, but we have to invite them in. We have to ask for their help. Otherwise, they're kind of just sitting there waiting, I guess. And so, yeah, I guess one piece of advice from my life as a, or at least just to share a practice that I think is profound and transformative in a way that I'm not even aware of. You know, I have the sense that it opens up this whole other possibility of, you know, not about getting everything I want, but helping me to be more in alignment with myself and, you know, inviting in the support and the guidance and the good stuff into one's life. and do it for a while and see what happens.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it goes back to the free will, they respect that. So it's important to invite them. And I also have been doing that practice, and sometimes I get clear answers and sometimes I don't, and that's okay. So may we all continue to connect to the divine wisdom that's always available to us when we are open to receive it. So thank you so much for that. And thank you so much, Mark, for all of your astrological wisdom. Is there anything else you'd like to share about your offerings? Anything else you'd wish I had asked you?
So one thing I just want to mention that if people are interested in exploring astrology more, I had so many people ask me, can you recommend a good book on for astrology for beginners, laying out all the basics? And what I realized was I couldn't. There's a lot of books out there that are all about specific aspects of astrology, but as a general overview, there wasn't. And so what I ended up creating a few shortish online courses, basically designed to for people to take the first step into astrology, to understand the basics of the planets, the signs, the houses, the aspects, what they mean, incorporating a lot of famous people's charts as examples to give context. And so, yeah, I just wanted to mention that those courses are available on my website, as well as a whole host of different readings that I offer. Please go ahead and check that out. And if you feel called to Peru and you want to explore some profound transformative plant medicine with a truly exceptional shaman, my friend Bernard, and just a wonderful person, with me teaching some astrology and exploring some of that stuff, then also on my website under the retreats tab, you can check out that offering.
Yes, and I will make sure to put your website in the show notes. It's mark-flaherty.com. And all right, well, thank you again, Mark, and we'll see you online or in the Sacred Valley.
Yes, thank you, Raven. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's always a great joy for me whenever anyone wants to ask me about astrology. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about, so thank you for this
You're
invitation.
so welcome. Thank you. And thank you to all of my truth seekers for listening. Thank you for listening to another episode of Seeker's Library. If you are curious and want to dive deeper, then I invite you to book your custom intentional life roadmap and synergy session with me. I have opened up my calendar to do 4 of these a month, so if you're interested, check out my link tree or send me an email at love@seekerslibrary.net or a message on Facebook or Instagram. I also have a new offering coming up soon called Cosmic Alignment. If you want to learn more and stay connected and receive my awesome podcast emails every wave spell, then please sign up for my email list at seekerslibrary.net. My greatest wish is cosmic peace. May we harmonize in beauty, unify for a global conscious evolution, and deeply love and accept ourselves and each other through the process. Sending love light to you all, in Lakesh, Raven Star.